Well, good morning, or good evening. It's evening. Turn with us, if you will, to the book of Exodus. We're going to be looking at a passage familiar to you. It will take most of the chapter. We're not going to try to read all of it, but we will read most of it. About the manna, when God gave the manna and the lessons that we might learn from this great lesson. It says that the children of Israel had set out. They were 45 days, it says, in the second month on the 15th day. They are 45 days from what they had seen at the Red Cross, or the crossing of the Red Sea. And the people have already begun to grumble. We've already seen it with the water that had been made sweet that was bitter in the preceding chapter. He says here at verse 3, "Would that we had died," they were grumbling, "by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Imagine there were times that God let them deliberately become hungry. In fact, probably very hungry. Almost to the point that they would wonder, will we survive or not? And it's at those moments that these great lessons would be taught. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold," listen to it, "I am about to rain bread from heaven for you." That's quite a phrase, isn't it? Rain it like it would fall as the rain does upon us. At least here, not up in Seattle, "I am about to rain bread to you." We're talking about in a downpour. "And the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not." And so our title for the lesson tonight, the test, that they would be tested by the manna. Every day's portion that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. Verse 5, "On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily." So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, "At evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against the Lord. For what are we that you grumble against us?" Then at verse 9, Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling." God promises that he will not only give them quail as he will in the evening, but it is the manna part we are interested in. So drop down to verse 13. "In the evening quail came up and covered the camp. And in the morning," verse 13 says, "the dew lay around the camp. And when the dew had gone up, there was on the face of the wilderness a fine flake-like thing, fine as frost on the ground. When the people of Israel saw it, they said to one another, 'What is it?'" That is the Hebrew that sounds in our language is translated by the word manna. Manna means, what is it? They had never seen this before. They didn't know what it was. But it was covering the entire ground, as fine as frost, as it says. "For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, 'It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather of it, each of you, as much as he can eat. You shall take an omer according to the number of the persons that each of you has in his tent.'" He goes on to talk about how some would gather more and others would gather less, but they would share with one another. But notice at verse 19, "Moses said to them, 'Let no one leave any of it over till the morning.'" This would occur every day. They would have it every day but the Sabbath, as we will read in a minute. But they would have it happen each day, and they had to go out and gather a new supply. "If you kept it over," then notice what he says at verse 20, "but they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning they gathered it, each as much as he could eat. When the sun grew hot, it melted." I always wonder what it smelled like when it stank. You think it smelled like bad fish or something that has spoiled, rotten? But enough so that everybody would know who the culprits were. "On the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, two omers each. When all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, 'This is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil.'" Hence, in the picture, bread loaves. They could bake it into loaves. They could boil it, as we would maybe think of chicken dumplings, but in their case, dumplings. Bake what you will bake, boil what you will boil, and all that is left over lay aside to be kept till the morning. And so they laid it aside till the morning, as Moses commanded them, and it did not stink, and there were no worms in it. Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it. On the seventh, which is the Sabbath, there will be none. And on the seventh day, some of the people went out together, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days. Remain each of you in his place. Let no one go out of his place on the seventh day. And so the people rested on the seventh day. Now the house of Israel called its name manna. It was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. I like that. Moses said, this is what the Lord has commanded. Let an omer of it be kept throughout your generation, so they may see the bread which I fed you in the wilderness when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. And Moses said to Aaron, take a jar and put an omer of manna in it and place it before the Lord to be kept throughout your generations. So the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron placed it before the testimony to be kept by the Ark of the Covenant, by and inside the Ark of the Covenant, it actually ended up. The people of Israel ate the manna 40 years till they came to a habitable land. They ate the manna until they came to the border of the land of Canaan. Now imagine with me, if you will, 45 days before this, as I said, you have packed whatever you can carry as fast as you can. They didn't even have time to let the bread rise. Remember, that is why they ate the Passover. All leaven had to be removed. They're going to go out of Egypt fast. They take their tents and probably as much food as they can pack. Their cooking utensils, maybe water, obviously. Hay for their animals. What else do they take? But as little as possible to get out as quickly as they can. And yet, 45 days into the wilderness, you and your family are running seriously short of what you have packed away. And water has already been an issue, as it was in the last chapter. There are at least 2 million Israelites trudging along, following the glory cloud of Yahweh to only God knows where. And fear has to take hold of you at some point. You have to wonder, how is God going to feed all of these people? And so panic turns into grumbling. Maybe you start grumbling to your wife about it, or she to you. And then you grumble to your neighbors and maybe the people you're kin to. And before long, you're grumbling out loud and you're grumbling to Moses and to Aaron. And just then, Yahweh appears in all His glory in the cloud and speaks to Moses, saying, I will rain bread on you tomorrow, and you will know who I am. And so the next morning, the dew lifts off of the ground, and there it is, white flakes, small, as coriander seed, like frost on the ground. You ever thought about how they gathered it? I've always wondered if it was that fine, if it was that flaky, how much time it would take to gather what we're going to find out an omer is, 6 pints. 6 pints per person. And that they would gather that and make it into the bread that they would eat. And every morning it would disappear, the sun would melt it. If you left it over, as we have read, it would stink and breed worms. But the next morning, there it was again. For 40 years, God did this every day except the Sabbath. And He provided for His people. I like the fact that it's named manna and that in Hebrew that means, what is it? So what is it? What is it? Verse 4 says clearly, look with me again. I'm about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. This wasn't just about the bread that He was feeding them. In fact, we will find more about this in a minute. But He says it is a test. Now, I think it only appropriate that I preach this right now, because all of y'all are going to take your finals beginning in the morning. Maybe you've already had some. So what's the purpose of a test? Why does a teacher give a test? Well, they're wanting to know, do you know the subject matter? Do you know what it is that we have covered? To understand the correct answer is really not enough. It's going to be more than that. Sometimes it's going to be the measure of proficiency in the use of that knowledge. It's going to be, do you have a practical working knowledge of it? Tests are not pleasant experiences. I'm so glad that I get to just smile at y'all when you say, I have finals. I went through that process long ago. Of course, you realize where I went through it. Y'all have made the snide remark that if you roll down your windows, you go through Lubbock, they might throw in a diploma. But I still took finals. I still know how fearful that was. I still know how I hated it. And I still know how when I graduated, I just beamed at everybody who told me they had to take a final. So I'm going to tell you, finals weed out people, don't they? I hope you're all not weeded out. I want to see you come back. But it weeds out people. If you don't make the grade, if you don't pass the test, then you're not going to graduate, and not only will I be upset, but the people that are your parents will be upset. Abraham had to pass the test when God commanded him to offer up Isaac. Abraham had to pass the test when God said, get up out of your land of your kindred and go to a land that I will show you, a land that is flowing with milk and honey. And on we could go. God made every one of His people pass the test. And so Deuteronomy 8 and verse 2 says of this, you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and to test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep His commandment or not. That is to the next generation. This first generation would fail miserably in that regard. But to the second generation who had to watch every last one of those fighting men die in the wilderness, then they could enter in 40 years later. Imagine that sometimes there are people that say to Jesus Christ, I will follow your lead. Wherever you lead, I will go. Is that not what we say? That's what the word disciple means. Matthew 19 and verse 22, there was a rich young ruler who came to Jesus and said, in essence, that very thing. But Jesus looked at him and said, what? Sell all that you have, give to the poor, and come follow me. And the young man went away sorrowful because he had great possessions. When it got tougher than he was willing to pay the price, he just wasn't willing to follow God's lead there. I want to follow your will. I want to do your will, O God. And so he would warn us in Luke 6:46, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do the things which I say? The very thing that's happening here, the test of the manna is to see whether you will humble yourself and obey me, not in manna laws, but in things far more important. What happens when we face marriage, divorce, and remarriage? Will we follow what the book says? What happens if we have to discipline somebody, church discipline, in the family of God? What will happen if we refuse to do that because we're kin to them or because they're our friend? I only want, sometimes we say, what you, dear God, want for me. I wonder if we understand what we ask when we ask that. Peter was told by the Lord in John 21, most assuredly I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. And then John says this, this he spoke signifying by what death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this to him, he said to Peter, follow me. How would you like to be told by our Lord that when, now you're a young man, but when you're an old man, somebody's going to take your hands and bind them and lead you out to be executed? Would you follow the Lord all the days of your life, knowing that at some point when your hair is the color of mine or the lack of it, that somebody's going to come for you to kill you? Having no water, having no food, attacked by the Amalekites, in all of that they faced in the wilderness, their days were filled with inconsistencies. God let them hunger and go thirsty on occasion to the point that maybe they were parched and wondered if they could make it. But in spite of all of that, God was wanting to know, will you worship me? Will you continue to follow me in faithfulness? I won't forsake you. He wasn't going to let them die. He might let them get to where they were really hurting, but He wouldn't let them die. Will you worship me only when I defeat your enemies, or will you worship me when I must cast you down because of your own sin? Will you serve me only during times of abundance, or will you serve me in times of famine? Will you be committed to me only when there's enough money to pay the mortgage, Or will you serve me when you must sell your house to survive? Will you honor me when your marriage is healthy and your house is full of laughter and joy? Or will you serve me during your divorce or the death of your child? Manna, what is it? It is a test to develop our faith. Peter says, in this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire. He's talking about the ore having to go through the fire in order to purify and get the gold from it, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And so it is with us. We must be tested in order to develop our faith. Manna, what is it? It is not by bread alone, but we live by the Word of God. That's what he went on to say in the next verse in Deuteronomy 8, verse 3. So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Spiritual needs always far outweigh physical needs. We do not learn this. We will learn nothing. If we will not serve God in the least of His laws, I want you to look with me twice in this. First He said, gather only enough for the day. Back in verse 16. Each of you, what he can eat that day. Don't, verse 19, leave any of it till the morning. It's going to come again. Trust God. But they didn't listen to Moses. Some left some of it to the morning and it bred worms and it stank. And then at verse 27, he told them, gather twice as much so that you don't go out and work on the Sabbath and you don't gather on the Sabbath. It won't breed worms. It won't stink when you keep it over for that day. And yet on the seventh day, it says, verse 27, some went out together and found none. And God in His anger spoke to Moses, how long will these people be like this? They would show dismally their entire failure till that generation would be destroyed. So if they will not obey these little tiny laws, why in the name of common sense would they obey the 10? Why would they obey the ones that are of greater importance if they will not obey these? The New Testament speaks of it this way, he that is faithful in much, or least, is also faithful in much. If we will demonstrate that we will be to God in the least of things faithful, then the great issues that come along in life, we will also be faithful in. We will be obedient to Him. There was only one tree in the garden that God said, don't eat of it. One tree. But it shows the terribleness of the human heart. And it exposes us as well, that we sin in the same way. In John the 6th chapter, in verse 66, from that time it says, many of Jesus' disciples went back and walked with Him no more. Because He had made this hard thing, that I am the bread of life. We're going to come back to that at the end of the lesson. And Jesus said to the 12, do you also want to go away? Simon Peter answered and said, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou or you have the words of eternal life. And only that will keep us bound to Jesus if we believe that. The manna, what is it? It is a dependence upon a faithful God. Every day they went deeper and deeper into that wilderness. Have you ever seen pictures of that? I should have had that. Should have thought about putting that up. It deep into that wilderness, it couldn't even begin to support a 20th of their number, let alone all of 2 million. Farther away they go from oasis to an oasis, and where there's no water and God must make water come forth from the rock. Farther away they go from civilization. Farther away from the life-giving Nile. There are no stores. There are no marketplaces to buy goods. Every day the sun becomes hot and the manna melts away. And you pillow your head at night and wonder, will there be enough food for tomorrow? He said, don't leave any of it over. And when people did, it bred worms and stank. But then they have to witness that on the morrow, sometimes on those morrows, God was so angry with them that he killed a lot of them. At the golden calf incident, when he swallowed up Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, when he burned alive Nadab and Abihu, and the foolish ones with Korah, Dathan, and Abiram that held 250 of them, those censers to say, we have the right to burn incense, even though we are only Levites and not a descendant of Aaron. And so you had to wonder, I think, if you were thinking, will God be so mad at us that tomorrow the manna won't come? Tomorrow it won't fall like it has fallen. And yet for 40 years, regardless of whether they obeyed or disobeyed, the manna came every day except on the Sabbath. 40 years until Joshua chapter 5 and 12 says, then the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land of Canaan. And the children of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate the food of the land of Canaan that year. I tell you, all those years they wondered. There's no crop failure. No missed days. All of us are talking about our gardens this year. Last year was sort of a dismal experience. I was talking with Brother Knight about his garden and it's flourishing. I've got more tomatoes than I can count on my plants. And last year was a pretty good honey year. I don't know yet about this year. Last year wasn't a very good cattle year from some standpoints. You know, their years are like that. There are years when there's famine. There's years when you miss the crop. But listen, 40 years, every day, the manna falls and they eat. And nobody lacks any nutrition. God put all of it in there. And so you think of the daily manna routine of 2 million people who have to fan out away from the camp and gather those 6 pints of manna per person. That's an amazing thing to think about. Think about little kids helping. About people of all ages going out. The thing that you would have to ask yourself when you crossed over the land of into the land of Canaan, there's still 2 million of you. Now there's no manna. Now you will eat of what grows in that land. And so you'd have to ask yourself, is the miracle God of manna different from the God of providence? Is the God that gives the manna by miracle the same God of the field and the garden, of the beehive and the milk cow, of the fattening cattle and the laying chickens, and of the olive grove and of the vineyard? Is He the same God? He absolutely is. In fact, the psalmist says, or David writes, I have been young and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread. You think, as I've said before, what slender thread holds this society together. How quickly, when some disaster like Katrina and other things like that have hit different areas of the country, everything falls apart. And the only way those people survive is because it is airlifted into them, and there is countless effort put in by the federal government and the state governments to get the things to these people, and sometimes they don't get it to them fast enough. How many days could we go if the water spigot just all of a sudden dried up? I store several big old bottles of water, but you know what? How many can I store up? I can last for a while unless you come help me with it. What about Steve Britton? I went out to his place one time when he put his generator in. I'm thinking to myself, I need to do this. I haven't yet, but I need to do this. He's got 2 big old propane tanks that can run it. But you know what? He can last a little longer than the rest of us. You know, it wouldn't take much for everything to fall apart. And the way life is lived now, if a Great Depression hit, nobody lives on the farm anymore. Nobody has the gardens. Nobody cans their food, except the banks. Nobody does that. How long would we last? Or would we depend upon a faithful God who has promised to give all we need if we seek first the kingdom of heaven? The manna, what is it? It is the grace of God to a bunch of ingrates. They didn't deserve it, grumbling and murmuring 45 days in the wilderness, and they've just completely forgotten all the awe-inspiring plagues that have happened in Egypt. They've forgotten the God that smashed the smithereens, every last chariot that chased them and would have cut down their wives and children and murdered, left their corpses in the wilderness, and yet it was the corpses of the charioteers that washed up on the shore at their feet. Instead of punishing them because of their sin, God gave them more. Instead of a short fuse, He patiently endured them. Instead of packing His divine bags and heading back to heaven, He remained in their presence in the glory cloud that dwelt over the tabernacle. So are we prone to say, had we seen the mighty miracles of the Exodus, we would have strong faith. The reality is, do we grumble and murmur? Paul warns us in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 10, nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, on whom the ends of the ages come. Think of it very carefully. Do the elders only ever hear from you when things don't go as you want them to? That the only time they effectively hear from some members at Twin City. It can be a contagion that smashed the Israelites to pieces. And so can it us. It can be so in our lives outside, in which we say things like, my car broke down, it cost $500 to fix it. And why do doctors and dentists charge so much? Excepting all the doctors here. The electric company ripping us off. You know, sometimes you think we ought to pray, Lord, why have you blessed us with automobiles instead of donkey carts and walking everywhere we go? Why do I have a washing machine and a clothes dryer and lawnmower and a house instead of a tent and scrubbing clothes on a washboard with pots full of boiling water? Why did you let me be born in America instead of a slum in Bangladesh? A friend of mine came back from Tanzania. He helps teach them how to keep bees over there. And he had a picture of a fellow that came to learn how to keep bees in such a poor country that the average yearly income is the equivalent of 220 U.S. dollars. If they were to buy one of my beehives, it would be the equivalent of 60,000 U.S. dollars in comparison. You know what he had on his feet? I wish I'd asked him for this slide. The guy had found some old tires and had cut them the length of his feet and then drilled holes for them and made them into sandals. God ought to strike us dead every time we gripe. How did God answer all their griping? He just kept on giving His gracious love, which is His nature, for 40 years. Listen to it. They gathered an omer, 6 pints per person. If there were 2 million of them, they gathered 12 million pints every day. 9,000 pounds. 4,500 tons daily. And that would be the equivalent of 300 railroad cars loaded with 15 tons of manna each every day. And God did it over and over and over again for 40 years. And so, what is it, manna? It is the grace of God that sent Jesus to die for us. The manna in the wilderness did not give life everlasting. Those that ate it eventually died. And that is the point that Jesus makes in John the 6th chapter at verse 48. I am the bread of life, He said. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which comes down from heaven as that bread did also. But this bread, me, that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread, bread that really gives life, which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world. If you and I believe that, if we obey Him, then God has promised to give us everlasting life. If you're subject to heaven's invitation this night, we can help you to be obedient to Him. We bid you come as together we stand and sing.